Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We're going to spend the first part of our program talking about all the issues surrounding the Baltimore City Police, especially, that has been in the news. Let you know that I think in a week, I have this right, I'll let you all know right now before we introduce our guests, Commissioner Bielefeld will be on the program. So we can prepare a little bit for that conversation today, talking with our guest now. I think Commissioner Bielefeld will be here on Tuesday, August the 16th, from 5 to 6 p.m. And that following Thursday, Mayor Stephen Rawlings-Blake will be on as well. But we have the commissioner coming on. But right now, we're going to have a conversation with James MacArthur, who is contributing editor and crime correspondent for the Investigative Voice. Good to see you back in the studio again,
Mr. MacArthur. Good to see you, Mark.
And Major Doug Ward is director of the Johns Hopkins University Division of Public Safety Leadership at the School of Education. And for 27 years, he was in the Maryland State Police Department. And Doug, good to have you back.
It's great to be back, Mark.
And the number here is 410-319-8888. And raise your questions and thoughts about the police, police activity, how they're working in your community, issues and questions you have about what's been in the news. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And the last time, Doug, you were on this program was right after, not long after, the fatal police shootings at the Select Lounge.
Yes.
And we didn't plan it this way, but now we've, a few days before.
Good follow-up.
We've seen the commissioner, excuse me, the Attorney General Greg Bernstein say that with Torbett's killing, the officer who was killed and the other gentleman who was killed, that there was no criminal wrongdoing. No one will face any criminal charges. And I remember when you were on that day, I remember you saying that it's hard to justify 42 bullets flying into a crowd.
Yes, and I quite frankly still have that concern. So I get it that legally if an officer feels his or her life is threatened, they can use deadly force. I totally get that and I agree with that. And I can understand how that could happen. Even under these circumstances, but I can never understand how this many rounds gets fired with a crowd around. I mean, the last time I checked, you know, we train police in this country for the most part to use deadly force to stop the threat, not to kill or execute people. So most police departments in this country train with two rounds and assess, or maybe three in some cases, and assess. But to stand there and empty a magazine, to me, is just incredible.
You know, from the surface, I could tell you.
And weren't you near there that night?
Yeah, absolutely. I broke my story.
That's right. I remember that. Right.
It was just unbelievable what my informant, my source, who was on scene as it was going down, was telling me. I couldn't believe it. I rushed over there. I'm like, this is not what you're saying. It's not cops shooting cops. And right away, this was told to me. I'm like, you're kidding me. And this is interesting how this person knew that Torbett was a cop early on. So this whole idea of the responding officers not being certain is still a matter of controversy. It has to be. It has to be something that we, the citizens of Baltimore, continue to look at, despite the clearance of any criminal wrongdoing. And to what Mr. Ward would say, procedural-wise, I think this raises some serious questions. It can't just be over well because the state's attorney declared it, now let's move on. And I think some people would like to see that. But, you know, long before I was writing stories and stuff like that, I went to the police academy. I took tactical training. I went on a ton of raids. And it's hard for me to understand how, with the presence of one possibly bad guy gun, justifying that many shots. And we know it wasn't even a bad guy's gun, but just one. It wasn't like there was a gang of guys shooting back at the cops. And I also have to wonder, we haven't seen a surveillance tape, and apparently we will at some point. But I have to wonder, after the first few rounds hit him, Mark, I find it hard to believe that he was still discharged any rounds to justify more rounds being fired at him. But that's my opinion.
I mean, as we said a minute ago, I mean, if there are no criminal charges being filed, you can discuss and argue that point, I think. Some people probably will hear, I'm sure, 410-319-8888, your thoughts on that. But but beyond that, I mean, it seems this is something that political leaders, and perhaps I'm wrong about this, not knowing how one would manage a police department, but the leaders of a police department would want to get more involved with in depth in terms of investigating it and with the public to talk about this, because it's not a minor incident.
But we haven't seen that, Mark. We haven't seen a full engagement of the public saying, hey, you know what? We know we have some issues with this department, and we really want to work with the citizens to become not user-friendly isn't the term, but again, we haven't seen a leveling with the citizens at large. Like, hey, you know what? We've made some big mistakes, and we really want to fix this so this stuff never happens again. I haven't seen it.
Or at least some explanation. If let's say it's a training issue. Let's say people are, as I've been told, trained to keep firing rounds.
That's what we do in war.
Well, you know, I mean, that's something I think that the department needs to look at from top to bottom. What are the policies? What is the training? And what's reasonable? Again, to me, it's a matter of justice. We're here, the police are here to make sure justice occurs, not to, you know, they're supposed to stop the threat. Now, what does that take? What's reasonable? That's the question. What's the reasonable way to create a promote a theory of justice, not execution? What does that take? And in most cases across the country, and I was on a chiefs of police panel back in the 1980s where we developed a model national deadly force policy. And, you know, what's the reasonable way? And the reasonable way we thought at the time, and that policy still stands today in most police departments, is, you know, fire 2-3 rounds and check. If the threat's gone, go give them first aid, call an ambulance, and get them into the justice system. It's not to kill people. Police don't have the right to kill people execution style. That's just wrong. It's morally wrong. It might be legally, technically correct, but it's not morally, and it's not a matter of justice.
And that seems like a really – what you're describing, I think, for most people who – community people, maybe even for a lot of officers as well, that's a really thin line when you talk about what could be, you know, legally, technically – an unresolvable crime issue, but not morally and ethically. So that, I mean, that's a really
tough. If you want to, there's two terminologies I'm going to import to this discussion real quick. Number one, to use modern, you know, productivity parlance, are we using best practices in this department? That's a question I think the city should be asking the leaders. Is this department really employing known, established best practices? You know, gleaned from these type of conferences this gentleman talked about. I don't know that they are, but I think it's a valid question. I don't know that they're not either. But secondly, if this were a war, which unfortunately some officers really see it that way, but it's not because we have a constitution here, the Baltimore Police Department has lost the hearts and minds of the citizens of Baltimore. The citizens are not on board with this, by and large. No matter how justifiable these things are, no matter who says crimes down, any of these things, they have lost the hearts and minds of the people of Baltimore, and because of that, it's an ongoing adversarial relationship. I mean, this is on the heels of the Tshombe. This is on the heels of Brown. You know, we've had some. It's on the heels of the guy on the motorcycle getting hit after he was told to back off the chase. Now, we could go down this list. It would be so boring because it's so long, but there are people paid to do this. They need to analyze this and wonder what's really going on here.
The other thing is, and people come to me a lot and they say, well, if it's legal, then it must be the right thing. And I just kind of think about that and remind them that, well, you know, it was legal to round up the Jews during the Holocaust. It was legal to own slaves in this country. Those aren't moral. They were legal, though. So just because something is legal, technically legal, doesn't make it the right thing to do.
Well, so before we jump into the phones here, and Ernest, William, and Aaron, the first three callers, I want to come to your calls in that order. At 410-319-8888. What you just raised, Doug Ward, and again, we're talking about the issues surrounding the Baltimore City Police Department and other area departments that you can raise as well. The voice you just heard was Major Doug Ward, who spent 27 years on the State Police Force. He's now Maryland State Police. He's now Director of Johns Hopkins University Division of Public Safety Leadership. And James MacArthur is with us, and he's been on the show many times as well. He's a contributing editor and crime correspondent for the Investigative Voice and was in law enforcement himself before. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can jump on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, become a fan, register your thoughts there. We'll read those. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com as well. But what you just raised, Doug, and then we'll go right to the phones here. What you just raised is an important issue, I think. When we say that things are legal, as you just described, it was legal to round up Jews. It was legal to, in the Holocaust, it was legal to have slaves. Many things were legal that affected horrendous ways human beings. So how do you go from what's legal to what's legally correct to running a department, even if it can it be done, a department that's morally and ethically correct in doing its work? I mean, is that an impossibility? Is this just against the nature of the beast or any beast we may have?
Right. So, I mean, this is nothing new around the country. There have been cases throughout our history where departments have become brutal, not by official policy, but it's condoned. Turn the other cheek, look the other way, allow things to happen. And leaders have to be always wary of that. And so you just can't make a policy and just expect that it's going to be carried out. By the same token, if you ask for certain statistics, you're going to get them. Now, the quality is another issue, so you have to watch all of it. But the main thing, I think, is to keep in touch with people who are being served by the police department. And so I always call it, you know, you can't police to a community. You have to police with the community. And when there's this barrier, this occupying force where people perceive it as that, they don't cooperate with police. They don't help police solve crimes as much as they would or should. And sometimes the police, it's a very easy thing to do if you're just coming into a place and you don't really care about the people who live there. You're just there to arrest people and go on your business. It just has a divide, though, that has happened in Los Angeles a number of years ago.
Oh, yeah. I was there.
Okay, so but it can be fixed. It's not something that has to be, but it takes a strategic approach. You just can't keep putting Band-Aids on things.
Mr. McCarthy, then we'll go to the police, and then we'll go to the phones.
You're probably talking about the Ramparts Division, right, in L.A.?
Yes.
Yeah, right. I was there for that. I covered some of that, mainly from a photography standpoint. I was running around with those guys, ducking when the shots got fired. But here in Baltimore, I guess the problem we have, Mark, is like he said, there's a lack of engagement. A lot of people do feel these guys are occupying force. It doesn't help that I forgot what number Bielefeld used, but most of them don't live in the city anyhow. So it's like, you don't care anyways. This is the attitude from a young age. Those guys don't care. They don't live around here. They don't have to deal with these problems after their shift is over. And that, I can't say that I blame them. But it creates a mindset. It really broadens the us versus them mindset that all people in law enforcement have to be careful not to develop. Or actually even in a war, because you have soldiers starting to treat civilians that way. And I think that's what's happening here. It happens at a deep, deep psychological level, Mark.
Let me open the phones, and we'll also, in the course of the hour, when we finish this part of the discussion, look at these whole issues people are raising about corruption and pointing the finger at Commissioner Bielefeld that he should leave, should be fired. Every other candidate running in the race, other than the mayor, obviously, is saying we fire Bielefeld as soon as we get in. Is that the answer? I mean, and we'll look at all those corruption issues, too, when we come back. 410-319, but hold that thought. 410-319-8888. Ernest, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Yeah. I have over 30 years, over 25 years on the Baltimore City Police Department. And with this Officer Torbett shooting, one thing we know is that Officer Torbett shot 8 times into a crowd that was unarmed. He also shot Mr. Gamble, who was unarmed.
We don't know he shot into the crowd, though, do we?
Yes, we do.
The crowd and not Gamble? Do we know that?
Shot into the crowd 8 times. Who are you? Who's talking?
That was James McCarthy, one of our guests, asking a question.
Oh, James McCarthy?
Jimmy.
Jimmy, the bodyguard?
You got it.
Yeah, right. Please don't interrupt me anymore, please. Shot into the crowd 8 times, shot Sean Gamble, and Sean Gamble wasn't the person that knocked him down. It was another individual. And most of them there, they were at a party. And they were, Sean Gamble was a semi-pro football player, and most of the people there were semi-pros. Now, he shot into the crowd 8 times. When he was knocked down, he was on his back shooting into an unarmed crowd. Now, they said that he was working, but we haven't heard the tapes, because if he was working, he should have called a Signal 13. You're in plain clothes, you got your gun out, you are taught to call a Signal 13 immediately and let the dispatcher know what you have on and where you're located. It would be a crime if an officer called a Signal 13 and said he was in plain clothes and other officers come on the scene and shoot him dead. That would be a crime. But what's happening in this case is that they, Bielefeld and the police department and the state's attorney's office didn't get out in front of this. They should have played the 911 tapes, then we would have been able to decide if Officer Torbett was working for a Select Lounge or was he working on duty? And see, that's the question that has to be asked. And another thing, Mark, you have a former state police on there?
We do. Major Doug Ward.
Major Doug Ward. How you, Major?
Just fine.
In Baltimore City at the Trailways, it was an individual down with a bow and arrow. The police shot more than 100 times. I think it was 150 times. And a tactical officer was shot in the back of the head. And they had another case in the southeast Baltimore where a police officer was responding to a scene of a holdup. And when he approached the assailant had his back to the police officer. He shot him, tapped him two times in the back, like you said. And he whipped around. I think his name was Spell. He whipped around with a shotgun and blew him to pieces. And also down in Florida, you remember the case. I know you would remember this because it was a case that was shown in all police departments all over the United States where the FBI was in chase of two individuals who were combat-trained Vietnam veterans who were sticking up banks and killed a guard. You remember that case?
Yes.
And when they shot the at least one or two shots that hit the individual was automatically was going to kill him. It was going to kill him right on the spot, the first two shots. But he was able to kill several other FBI agents that was trained in that. My point is this. If the police department had got on and showed that 911, played that 911 tape, then police like Major Ward would have known if this police was working on working for the Select Club. I know why they didn't play it. They didn't play it so they could give this guy a commissioner's burial and see that the family would get the funds that was necessary.
Okay, we have a lot of callers. And
these, okay, let me
kind of what you just said. I think that especially this one point that Ernest just made. What would have happened if the police and the city, do you think, had opened immediately the 911 tape, had shown the video surveillance, that had let the people see what was going on? Now, would that have created a more difficult situation with the investigation? Would that have gone further to ameliorate the situation and be able to create a public discussion about it so people could be part of this discussion? I mean, what would happen if you handled things in a very different way that way?
Well, in general, I mean, from a good management standpoint, the more transparency, the better. Now, obviously, you don't want to jeopardize a criminal investigation, so you'd have to weigh those things as to what you release. But if you can release more and not jeopardize the investigation, I think the more understanding people have of what the circumstances are, the better. But when they had to make that call.
But the investigation's over. We still haven't seen them. So, I mean, you know, now we're finding a new justification as to why there's a delay in this, which I think is very interesting because it is over now. It's not too late, but now there's a further delay.
And if these were released now for the press to kind of examine and people can talk about it and write about it, it might go a long way to either, well, it could create a larger discussion that it was unjustified not to charge anybody, or it could go to allowing the public and journalists to really kind of go through it, investigate it, talk about it, and create a discussion that might help.
Well, sure. And if you have bad news to get out, it's much better to get it all out and move on than it is to have it dribble out multiple times and then everything gets rehashed six or eight times. So from a public relations standpoint alone, get it all out and get it over with.
Let's go to Lonnie on the east side. Lonnie, you're on the air.
I was just listening to the gentleman who called just before I did, and I had the very information that he had. And I was trying to figure out why other people, like the radio, the news, even the spokesman for the police force, wasn't putting this information out. That's one point. That's one question.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is we are here in the city of Baltimore. We complain when the police use force or stopping criminals. But at the same token, when the police doesn't use enough force and the criminal comes back on the person, say the person who turned them in or the person who's going to turn them in, all these things, it's like a no-win situation for the police force. No one is speaking out.
But I think that would be the justice system, not the police. If someone is coming back and retaliating, that's because the whole system has failed. I don't think that's the police's fault. I don't think that's a matter of force, whether enough or not enough, because we can't say, let's beat them so bad they won't dare go back and retaliate. We can't do that.
No, what I was saying is, if I'm standing in the street and the police come up to me and say, put your weapons down, get down on the ground, and I'm going to stand there, even if I got a baseball bat in my hand, and the police ask me to drop the weapon, and I'm going to be defiant, I think the police should take them out. Because a defiant person like that against a policeman, what do you think he's going to do against a regular citizen?
Well, in the case of a baseball bat, that would definitely be a summary execution, because, you know, you can have a buffer between yourself and a guy wielding a baseball bat that doesn't require use of lethal force. So, you know.
But what Lonnie's talking about, though, there's always this line, and the line is, and I'll just throw it out there. I'm off on the other side of the line, but the line is, do we not give policemen enough room? Is the question I think Lonnie was
pointing. I'll let Major Ward answer that.
There's a tremendous amount of leeway that police have. So, for instance, let's take a minor thing. A speeding car. Technically, the law says if they're going 1 mile over the speed limit, you can write them a ticket.
Right.
But police have a choice, right? We want them to as a public. We've given them discretion, we call it, right? Mm-hmm. So reasonableness again. Now, if they're doing 20 miles over the speed limit, they're probably going to get stopped and get a ticket. But, you know, 1 or 9, there's discretion. And the same thing with the criminal law. Our society has determined that discretion is important. That's why we give police this ability. In other words, they're not mandated that every law that's violated that they make an arrest, because there's so many laws, we'd all be in jail, right? So this discretion is there for a reason. And the same thing with the response to force. And you know, and I have to, it's such an individual incident, because you can't just blanket this stuff. It's what's in the mind of the police officer at the time, what the circumstances are. It's a whole lot of things going on there. That police officer has to make a split-second decision as to whether or not to respond with deadly force. So you got to give – and that's why the courts and a lot of people – you got to give the benefit of the doubt in a lot of cases to the police officer, because you don't know all the circumstances. But when we train them, one time someone spins around in the alley, like this gentleman caller just said, and they're holding a baby. I just found this baby. And these automated FATS training systems, you know, you'll have police officers shoot and kill the baby. And the other time they turn around, they've got a gun. So they should be trained to realize it's not always what it seems. Now, some people say, well, but the policeman might get shot. Well, you know what? Yes, that's
a risk of the job.
Unfortunately, it is. I mean, it's like shooting into a crowd. There's sometimes you just got to know, if somebody's shooting at me, am I going to shoot innocent people, or am I going to have to find cover and take my lumps? And in my case, I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to shoot into a crowd. I don't care what happens. I'm going to go seek cover, and that's just the way it's going to be. I'm not going to kill some innocent person. But it's an individual choice based on individual circumstances.
Let's return to the phones here and come back to our guest. 410-319-8888. Aaron, you're on the air. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yeah, do you have there's a little feedback.
Hold on, I don't have the radio on. Let me see, I have the television on. How about now?
You still got it? Is your radio and TV down?
I don't know what that is, man.
All right, well, go ahead, see what you have to say.
Well, first of all, in our city, we have a police commissioner who's no better than the Bull Connor of Alabama, to be honest with you. And I think, quite frankly, we need not only a new police commissioner, we need a new mayor who will revamp that police department from top to bottom. Because what we have is a police force that's no better than a Nazi force it's interesting that they only do this in black communities. They don't do it in white ones. They attack black folks this way, and quite frankly, we have a black mayor who just doesn't care, and we have a police commissioner who's no better than Bull Connor of Alabama.
All right.
And we need a new police commissioner. We need a revamped police department.
If I could just comment briefly,
please.
On that. I mean, It's really unfair, I think, to indict an entire department based on actions of maybe a few or you know, maybe there's improvement room for leadership. And as far as the political thing, that's something that people who vote have a chance to do whatever they want to do when it comes time for an election. But I don't think it's fair to there are a lot of really good Baltimore police officers. I mean, I know them. Most of us know them. They're trying to do a good job. They're having a tough time. And then there's some that aren't maybe doing things for the right reasons. We know that. So it's really unfair, I think, for us to paint everything with the same brush.
And I agree. You know, I think that goes to screening initially, but not just initially, on an ongoing basis, because there's definitely something culturally wrong within the department, again, which doesn't mean every officer is part of it. But there is a culture that I have to say it drastically needs changing. I mean, you have too many guys comfortable just doing way too much wrongdoing here. Again, out of the greater body, it's a small percentage. I will concede to that. But this department is a mess. I mean, if you really look in just the last year, how many things you had? I mean, you got a dope-dealing cop out of the district station. You have another cop stealing money from informants. And this isn't the first time this has come around, too. This is just the most recent ones.
Well, let me ask both your perceptions about this, and then we'll go back to the phones here. We'll take a break and go back to the phones, and we have a lot of callers. We're going to try to get to every one of you. And Gilbert and LeVar, who's after that, who called in, and William and Hanover. Actually, we'll come next to William and Hanover. We'll come back from this break. But the question which you just raised, James MacArthur, I mean, when you see all this corruption bubbling up like this out of a police department, is it a problem that is endemic to the police department? Is this just the tip of the iceberg? Are these just the bad apples that people catch floating to the surface? I mean, how deep does it run from your perspectives? You know, because we can – I'm curious if this is a great deal of media hype or is this truly running deep inside of a department? What's your learned experience being a former policeman?
Well, you're always going to have a few bad apples in any large organization. I mean, that's pretty much comes with the territory. The question is, what do you do about it? How do you know? What do you do to find out early? What do you do about your hiring practices? You know, what do you do about ongoing checks of integrity? The thing that amazes me is really the towing scandal is the one that I still shake my head at. If there are that many people that we know are involved, there had to be 100 who knew about it and turned the head.
Yeah.
See, because everybody knows what's going on. That one amazes me, is how that could have gone so far. That troubles me more than all these other ones.
And that's the largest scale.
There were 54 policemen involved, right?
I know some of them personally.
Yeah,
I mean, on good terms, too, you know, but hey.
So if what you just said is true, I'm not doubting what you're saying, but what you just said is true, that you have 54 policemen who are facing indictment over
kickbacks. Oh, they've pled to it. A whole bunch of them have pled.
But and if 54 means that other and usually other police officers know what's going on.
Look the other way.
Now that's what I'm talking about. Is that's endemic to a culture? Is it different than what happens with doctors who surround a bad physician who's improperly practicing medicine, but defend him to defend themselves in some senses? Is that what you're saying? How do you break that culture?
If I can add to that. So you have that situation. How does that happen? Well, how do you have the major in charge of internal affairs hanging out with a guy who's under surveillance, FBI surveillance, for months and months and months, and you don't know that they're buddies and there's Facebook pictures of the two of them until it hits the papers? That's what we're led to believe. So that adds to it. You have this officer who's dealing dope, and he's like best friends off the clock with the major of internal affairs. So now that guy gets relieved because, oh, wait a minute, we just found out about this. Really? That's how this is being run, that we're just finding this out? I mean, it's on his Facebook page where everybody can see. And if this guy was under surveillance for all this time, command knew that. So, you know.
Quick thought, then we'll go to break.
Well, I mean, you know, there are ways in police organizations where you can have as part of the subculture an intolerance to corruption. And those can be built from the day the person enters the police academy and reinforced throughout supervision and leadership. But ultimately, the responsibility rests with the leaders. You know, like I say, you can have a policy that says, you know, you shall not steal, you shall not whatever. But if you don't have procedures in place to test that constantly, look at every system within the organization, you can't just throw your hands up and say, oh, it's a surprise.
But we're going to take a break here and kind of wrestle with this. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888, as a full bank of callers have, when you get your calls. On the way there, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. And remember, it is not a bank, it's a credit union and belongs to you. And you get money back at the end of the year. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are here with James MacArthur, contributing editor and crime correspondent for The Investigative Voice, Major Doug Ward, director of the Johns Hopkins University Division of Public Safety Leadership at their School of Education, and who is retired from the Maryland State Police Force. He served on that force for 27 years. And 410-319-8888. We're looking at things that are affecting the Baltimore Police Department. Your thoughts about that? And let's see, who did I say we're going to go to first? I said William in Hanover. You're on the air.
Good evening, Mr. Stern.
Good evening. Welcome.
police force or brutality, they do this because there's no accountability towards the police. Police do anything and they get away with it. Two, training. Anytime a police officer come up on a crime scene or he happens to kill somebody in a hail of gunfire, the first thing the police commissioner says is, oh, he reacted according to training. Now, has anybody ever looked into the kind of training the police are getting to protect and serve the citizen? Because if that's the kind of training they're getting, they're not protecting and serving nobody but themselves. And then, last but not least, you got the police investigating the police. How objective is that going to be?
Okay. William, thank you for your input. Training is one of the issues. That's one of your issues.
Well, of course, I mean, training in a police organization is really paramount. It reinforces the policies. It teaches skills. And you can really set that subculture as to how you train as well. So it's very important, and it's something that should go throughout the career of a police officer.
Now, I'm going to go to LeVar and Bilal here, our next two callers, but let me ask you a question first. And then LeVar, hold on. Bilal, you're on. Then in comes, we have Oscar as well holding on. So there's a number of people we're going to get to here in the next few minutes. But I want to come back to this corruption issue and what people know and what they don't know.
Okay.
Do you, either one of you think, or do any of you listening out here at 410-319-888 think that you can end the practice inside of any large institution, including the police? And police is really critical because they're armed and they have the public trust and they arrest people, and that their job is to protect and serve this community. So that it's a bigger issue when it comes to police on some levels, as it is with some other professions like physicians and others. But can you unroot, for want of a better term, not protecting their own? Not thinking that, okay, 54 guys get busted for this towing scam, which means at least a few hundred other policemen knew about it, and probably there was a buzz for the other couple thousand knew something was going on. They didn't know the details. The other couple hundred did know that these 54 guys, you might be riding next to him or her in the car, that are doing it. I mean, can you really end that kind of situation inside the department?
Well, absolutely you can. I mean, you're always going to have a few bad apples, but that's – and anything in life, we've got that.
But I mean, it's not the bad apples. I'm talking about the people all around who know what's going on.
Right, right. So you set a climate where it's okay to not turn your head. So for instance, maybe there are dispatchers who maybe noticed that people are always got their own toe at every accident. You know, there are people who notice things. I'm sure looking back that they're like, you know, something was going on. Where were the first-line supervisors? Where's a sergeant who doesn't notice that people are always requesting this particular tow service? I mean, come on. It just doesn't happen, right? So why not inquire into that? So leadership has to require that people – it's okay that the corruption is not acceptable. I know it sounds simplistic, but it's a matter of leadership. It's a matter of setting the tone. It's a matter of what's acceptable in a subculture and what's not.
Do you know any department in the country? In all your, do you know any department anywhere in the country that you've consulted with, worked with, trained people in that actually has gotten to, been able to rid a department of that kind of culture?
Well, you're not going to rid it completely, but and it may take years. I mean, if it's really in there, deep seated. Talk to many remember Neil Behan, who was a long-term Baltimore County chief here and came from New York, where he was chief of patrol. He had these difficulties in New York many years ago, but he was able to go in there, root it out, make it unacceptable. And like I said, when you hire people, almost every police department, you ask a recruit, why do you want to be a police officer? I want to help people. They come in the front door wanting to help people. And somehow the organizations turn them into cynical, stop wanting to help people, what's in it for me people. And that's the organization that does that. And that comes from leadership and how they demand people, how you frame things.
Speaking of leadership, though, let's examine leadership a little closer. Let's use some real examples. We had in the last year Major McClarney, who was the head of homicide, in a very interesting incident where his car was found at the bottom of a ditch, his police issued car, in Howard County. There was no paperwork filed. There was no reporting done. And this is the head of homicide, and I don't mean to pick on him, but this was a publicly released event. And, you know, that was okay until it got found out, until a few people leaked this out. So it just makes you wonder, where does this accountability start when you have a head of a major division involved in something like that? And I have a litany of other events that they just keep tallying in my head. It's like, wait a minute. And these aren't the worst offenses ever, but it just shows if the detail is being missed in the small things, is there detail being paid attention at any level when you have guys just doing these improprieties? Detective Anthony Fata got shot, supposedly, at the headquarters in the garage. We're still waiting for a release of a composite of what the suspect looked like. We still haven't seen the surveillance tapes of this description that was given out for this person who was looking after, they were looking for. But he does have a track record of some interesting injuries that happened on the job that were 100% not necessarily self-inflicted, but they didn't involve anyone else. And he gets shot. There's this gunman on the loose. We have no record of the ballistics. I mean, everything points to it was his own weapon. And this just gets swept away. And we just go down the line of these things that no one is checking back into. Well, except guys like me, and then, we get vilified.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts on this conversation. And let's see. I'm looking at the four people who've been holding on the longest. Gilbert, you're on the air. Hi, Gilbert. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, Mark.
Hi.
This is something different. I was coming back from the bank. I didn't drive, me and my friends, so we decided to walk. And we walking down Moji Street, 400 block. There were four police cars just parked there in the middle of the street. And four officers were standing on the sidewalk talking. And I approached them. I said, can I ask you a question? And one of them said yes. I said, if I was driving and I parked my car like this in the middle of the street, I would have a ticket. I'm saying this is not being racist. It was three white cops and one black cop. So one of the white cops said, no, he said, I won't give you a ticket. I would tell you to move your car. So as we started walking away, now this is the black officer. You better get your butt out of here if I lock you up. I don't mind locking up an old man. And my right arm is in a sling because I had tendonitis. I said, sir, what did you say? You heard what I said. Get your butt out of here. And he just went on and on and on. I said, sir, that's not necessary. I said, I'm a taxpayer. I paid your salary. I said, hey, you all standing up here talking. Then I say something, you're going to threaten me. So, he just kept going on. And my friend said, Gilbert, come on, just walk. And the other two officers, they jumped in their car and they took off. But he was standing there, just trying to antagonize me into an argument or confrontation. And this is what citizens of Baltimore go through almost every day. I mean, it's like we can't say anything to him. And he was wrong, And that's all I have to say.
Well, Gilbert, I'm glad you raised it. And maybe we can raise this again next week when the commissioner joins us on Tuesday at 5 o'clock. But that his story is not – Gilbert's story is not a story that is unique, unfortunately.
And the interesting thing there is there are things that don't cost a nickel to do. One of the things is courtesy. It doesn't cost the police department one nickel for officers to be courteous to people. It doesn't cost a nickel to have uniforms that look sharp. And so there are things where, again, getting back to the training issue, if that's what's expected, you look sharp in your uniform and you're polite, that can get rid of a lot of problems just on the face of it. How you treat people can make the difference of whether or not you get into a fight and have to make an arrest versus you have a happy citizen walking away going, wow, that was a great encounter.
But isn't
doesn't cost a nickel.
But isn't it true that a lot of police feel like if you're polite and if you're not distant in your relationship with somebody, then you will not be feared nor respected?
Well, I'll tell you a story on that, okay? Imagine you're a state trooper, and it's the middle of the night, and you have a whole county. You're the only police officer in an entire county on the Eastern Shore. And you stop a car at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's four people in the car, and they're drunk. You learn very quickly that politeness counts, because unless you want to fight four people, four drunks in the middle of the road with no help, the sergeant at the barrack an hour away is your backup. I can't tell you the amount of times that courtesy, politeness. I worked in Prince George's County for 12 years on the street, and I've had a number of people say, you know what, state troopers, I'm not going to fight you. I would fight anybody else, but I'm not going to fight you. Whatever you say, sir, because I call them sir, I call them ma'am. Now, if it gets into the tussle, it just does. But I think you can talk your way into a fight or you can not.
You know, when I was a young agent, I remember I never had anyone resist any time I tried to make an arrest. It's just my luck or whatever. It just so happens I spoke in very plain, uncertain terms. My partner, who was about Mark's size, got into fights all the time. All the time.
Wait, what are you trying to say?
He always
man?
Had to, you know, back this guy up and pull somebody off him. He usually ended up getting the upper hand eventually, but everything turned physical. Like, what? Again, he's fighting. Oh, my gosh. You know, what seemed like a simple takedown, this guy's in a knockdown, dragdown. And, you know, I think attitude does have, so I threw in the size for humor, but he was.
Right.
But approach is definitely part of it. This guy, I almost said his name. He was a little too cocky in his approach.
Let me go to, we just lost Belial. I was going to go to him, so we'll go to LeVar. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, LeVar. You're on the
yes,
air.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. Hi to all your guests. I just wanted to chime in on, it does appear that the police officers have a little less care about the people that they serve, maybe that they have done in times past. When you look at the situation where they had thrown out rape cases for years, not even looking into them, where about a couple of years ago, they bragged about the murder going down, and it was only because that they changed the category from murder to unknown for how the cause of death was, even though they might have had five bullets in their head. Another incident, it seems like when white victims are white people are killed or something happened with them, the investigation goes forward, and they're always found to be, you know, justified there. But when, you know, black people are killed and murdered and it's a tragedy or whatever,
mm-hmm.
all we get is cold cases. You know, they never find out whatever happened to them. I kind of echo what some of the callers were saying about accountability. I always wondered why they could never get video cameras in the police cars like they do with the Maryland troopers. I mean, you know, the citizens are almost demanding that, and that's being ignored just like they ignore us in Congress. What is the deal with that?
In Prince George's County, it's mandated. Actually, many agencies are going to that, and it, the cameras are facing both ways too. You know, it's a point of view of the officer, and it's facing back. If I could tell a story real quick, something else that doesn't cost a penny. You talk about the courtesy and looking neat in the uniform, which is very important. But just I guess it's a takeoff of courtesy, responsiveness. I mean, this is a personal story. Okay, when I look out my window and there's a fight going on and a guy reaches his waistband, pulls out a handgun and fires it in the air, and I see the muzzle flash, so I know what I'm looking at. And I call 911, and the officer is cruising down my street, and I'm jumping up and down to get his attention, and he just cruises past me, and I run back and I listen to my police frequency, and I heard that this was unfounded. I know where these crime stats come from, at least one of them that night. To tell me a guy discharging is now unfounded, the one citizen who called, and you wouldn't stop to take this report. Again, was this just that guy lazy that night, or is this something that's wider spread? Here it is. We have the gun and violence problem in the city, and I'm trying to give you a detailed description. I saw the guy plain as day, where he may have went to, whatever, and no one ever stopped to talk to me. I'm literally on the side of the road. I could have reached out and touched his car as he cruised past me like he didn't see me. And this is a true story, Mark. I wrote about it.
And I read that story. Any thoughts on what LeVar was saying? Let's go back to the phones. LeVar, thank you for being part of the show. 410-319-8888. Oscar, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Oscar.
Let me say this. You know what's wrong with the Baltimore City Police Department and other police departments? They recruit from the human race. That's what's the deal. You can go to any profession, and I'll bet you 20 to 1, you'll find the same type of things being happening. And you got people running for mayor who's stolen money from insurance money. I mean, politicians, beauticians, in any profession, they are good people and they are bad people. I mean, with people to get on the air and all this. So, now, I was a policeman for 25 years in the city of Baltimore. At one time, we was voted the best-dressed police department in the country. That's before they started. We used to wear the white shirts before they went through all this blue stuff. Now, if I'm a citizen, you may see something that doesn't look right. You got four police officers standing around talking. I'm going to go up to them and say, why are y'all parked there? He has no idea. If you have a complaint, call the district. Police are parking, double parking in the middle of the street and holding up traffic. That's what he do. He doesn't walk up to four police officers. They might be talking about a case. He has no idea. Why would he do something like that? I mean, he's lucky he didn't get locked up, really. But I'm saying a lot of these people have a hatred for police officers, and I'm the first one to say if the police are wrong, I will say that wrong. I've been to IID on police officers. But I'm not going to listen to this foolishness. Now, take the case of Torbett. If Officer Torbett had lived, he shot Gamble and killed Gamble, I guarantee you these same people would be after Torbett, and the same ambulance chasers would be taking the case and trying to sue. And by the way, the tow truck thing, most of them cases have been thrown out. Have y'all heard the news? Most of them cases have been thrown out. Now, you got people, lawyers who will go around to an accident scene, pass out their cards if people are not even hurt in an accident, and they get the people to say they're hurt to go to this lawyer. That's nothing new. And that tow truck thing, that's not the worst thing that ever happened. They say, well, go to this tow truck. Well, what's so bad about that?
When there's money being exchanged, that's what.
What money is being exchanged, Jimmy? You know what, man? Weren't you a police one time? You tried to be in Baltimore City Police and didn't make it. Yeah. I think you have a problem with police.
All right, well, let's
it's not funny.
Oscar, let me jump into what we're talking about here. And what were you shaking your head about, Doug Whitten?
Well, sometimes we see where police officers get a little jaded. Let's think about it. If you only deal with problems in society and you deal with the worst of the worst, sometimes you feel like that's how everybody is. And the fact is you're dealing with a small percentage of the population, and most of the people that you serve are not part of the problem. And in many cases, want to be part of the solution. So it's I mean, I get that. I've been there. I've felt it. And so I do identify with the caller in a lot of respects. But I think when you back up a little bit and separate the emotion and you really look at it objectively, sometimes that just comes with the territory where you think it's us or them, that everybody's a bad guy unless proven otherwise, and just the police can you trust. And the reality is that's just not true. It just seems that way sometimes.
And go ahead.
It's a pervasive mentality that I've seen, including relatives of mine that are active right now, including command. So just to let the caller know, I'm not going to reveal stuff because I don't for their privacy. But it creeps in. If an officer doesn't guard against it, it definitely creeps in the whole us versus them. And this is just not a good place to be mentally. It can't be.
Now, I will check that out. I've not heard a lot of people being that these cases have
I haven't heard of
been exonerated, but I'll check that out. If that's true, that's true. Then we'll find out, and we'll look at that as well before Commissioner Bielefeld joins us on Tuesday. 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you
hi,
doing?
Bruce.
Yeah, I get fired up about this, but I'll try to keep my cool. But a couple quick comments. Personally, the Baltimore City Police Department as an agency, as a bureaucracy, is a total failure. It's not just the corruption. It's the way they handle the cases, the way they respond, their attitude. Like your guest was saying, couple contacts I might have had with a state trooper, it's completely different story. Yes, sir. No, sir. Can I see your license, sir? Completely professional, polite, personable. When it's from the city police department, they're terrible. They do a terrible job. They don't do follow-up. There's a lot of problems with the police department, and it's about responsibility for leadership. So the next comment, let me finish this comment. You know how you're going to straighten this out? Personal opinion, A, the mayor has to be voted out of office. We have to have a candidate or somebody that's going to replace the commissioner, even if it takes, because of all the problems, because of all the corruption, because of all the problems with the police department, even if the Justice Department or someone in higher authority takes a thorough look at the police department. Next, what you do is you have a full-time, permanent civilian review board that has some weight, that has power to subpoena.
Okay, we're just about out of time. No, excuse me, Bruce. I think let me just talk about the last thing you said, which we have not raised. So I think we should raise with the mayoral candidates, not so much whether you want to fire Commissioner Bielfeld or not. Do you think that city, state police departments, county police departments need a civilian review board?
Well, when you see around the country is you end up with that when you fail to do it right yourself, when the public confidence is lost. That's what this all hinges on. It's what the public thinks. It's not what the police department thinks. It's not what you or I think about it. It's the public in general. Do they have confidence that the police department can investigate itself in a fair and competent manner? When that's lost, you end up with a civilian review board, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but they're cumbersome. And things, you think they take a long time now, they can stretch things out a lot longer. So if from a police viewpoint, you're better off doing it right yourself with transparency as best you can within the laws, personnel laws and things like that, and just let the cards fall where they may, call it the right way. Because if not, what's going to happen is you're going to have a Justice Department investigation. They're going to recommend or mandate that there's a civilian review board. This thing is just bound to happen if something doesn't change. You see it all across the country. It's just – even though they may not be related, the incident after incident after incident just leads people to believe, I wonder what's really going on. And that question causes a loss of public confidence, which requires somebody to come in independently and just shake it all apart, look at it, see what's going on.
Wasn't the FBI involved with the towing scandal? They were, right?
I don't know about that one. I know they were in the – you know,
and this other guy in the Lunsford's case. I mean, so there's enough officers that have been looked at from that level and – if what some of my sources are saying is right about documents being requested and all these things, we may not be too far away from that. This stuff is not happening in a vacuum. We're way too close to Washington for this to happen like that.
Well, I think we are just about out of time for this segment of the show. I want to thank everybody for calling in and making the show what it was today, all our listeners, and getting into this. This is a subject that grabs the minds of many of people living in this Baltimore metropolitan area, and I appreciate you being part of the show today. Doug Ward, who is retired major from the Maryland State Police and now director of the Johns Hopkins University Division of Public Safety Leadership that trained police from all over the country in the School of Education. Good to have you back in the studio. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Always good to see you. Same with you, James MacArthur, contributing editor and crime correspondent for the Investigative Voice. Thank you for joining us today,
Mark,
as well. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. We're going to meet Joe Ehrman, a former Colt, who is doing some interesting things with young people as a coach, and his different mindset about how you can be a football coach and not be just a tough macho idiot. We'll talk about all that and more in the next hour, and we'll also look at the Verizon strike in the next hour. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Don't go away.